Colorado has struggled for years to adequately fund education. What do you think we should do?
Oh, another very difficult question. We're struggling long and have been struggling, if you want to use that word, long term with the restrictions of Tabor, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights passed in the early 90s by Colorado voters. We know that there's still strong support for some of those aspects of Tabor. People don't want to see out of control government spending, but at the same time, people also know that their public schools are very important to them. They're not only important to children, our children and grandchildren who go to school in public schools in Colorado, but it's also important to recognize that public schools are really at the core of our democracy in this country. Well-educated populace is what we need to elect really good public servants to help us continue on as a state and as a nation in a very successful way. So we have got to solve that. The burden of public school funding has fallen more and more to the states because local government under Tabor has not been able to raise property taxes to fund as they did in the past. So we really have to look at that. I know that there's been a lot of work done at the state to make sure we maintain enough funding for public schools. But rural schools, frankly, are suffering in the process. I've talked to a number of people in rural school districts that are very concerned about the reduced funding that they have.
Broadband has become an essential service, but the state legislature has created obstacles for local jurisdictions seeking to address the issue. Now, 60 governments have already gone to voters and said, wouldn't you like us to be able to do something about this? Every single district across the state has said yes, but the General Assembly hasn't acted. What do you think they should do?
I know it's been a long-term issue for rural Colorado, and it's unfortunate. I have the impression that the urban and suburban-dominated legislature just doesn't recognize the problem out here, that we all need high-speed internet access in order to participate in the 21st century economy. I was involved with an advocacy group in Southern Colorado when I lived there back in the 90s, and we were talking then about the need for broadband and high-speed internet all through rural Colorado, and here we are in 2016 still talking about it. So yeah, some local counties and cities are doing things on their own, which is wonderful if they can afford to do it. I know that Garfield County is looking at some things. Rio Blanco County had some saved up energy money that they're using to install fiber optic cable to homes in Meeker and Rangeley. But I also know that there's other areas that don't have those kinds of resources, and they're looking at either rural electric companies or others to help with that. So it's an issue that people are trying to solve locally, but I think the state has got to take a close look at what kind of regulatory scheme they've created that is getting in the way of this happening. And we have to look at this the same way we looked at getting electricity to rural parts of the United States many decades ago, and the same way we looked at installing landline phones decades ago to rural Colorado. It's the same kind of need, and so we've got to solve it and do it in a relatively quick fashion.
It's very difficult to win an election without raising money. Who are your largest donors, and do you think campaign finance reform is even possible?
Well, we do have, to some degree, we do have campaign finance reform in Colorado and have had that for more than a decade here. It's, for better or worse, it's kind of an interesting scheme for candidates. We can only collect a relatively small amount of money from individual donors or from what we call PACs. We can collect more from political parties, and we can collect more from what's called small donor committees, in which many people contribute up to $50 a year, and then they're able to compile that and contribute to a legislative candidate at about $4,850 per election cycle. So my largest donors are probably political parties and several small donor committees, such as Conservation Colorado, and a union or two. So those are my largest donors.
And finally, I'd like to ask you to comment on your opponent. Senator Randy Baumgartner is a Republican.
Well, in a short amount of time, I would say, I've been walking in 14 communities, towns and cities in this large district, talking with voters at the door, talking with voters in meetings and so forth. And what I hear most commonly for people who know about our current senator at all, I hear these common themes that he's not responsive to them. He doesn't respond to emails. He doesn't respond to phone calls. I've even heard that from local government officials in several counties in the district. And he doesn't seem to get out and talk with voters in any regular, comprehensive way. And it's really, I think more and more people are recognizing that he's disconnected from this district. And in addition, he's often not voting in the best interests of this district. He seems to be voting more in line with what his party folks tell him, and kind of the front range based party folks that are providing him information and guidance, I assume, on how to vote. It's just a perfect illustration of why we need a change in this district and why we need someone who's willing to really talk with everyone in this very diverse, large district and find ways to find common ground, common interests, and be a strong voice on behalf of those interests.
Emily Tracy, Democratic candidate for Colorado Senate District 8, is on Facebook at Emily Tracy for Colorado Senate and Twitter at E.T. Breck. Thanks so much for speaking to Katie and Kay.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Good to be here.